It is Thursday, the 19th of July. This is episode 127 of Digital Outbox. Hello, I'm Chris, and with me tonight is Ian. Hello, Ian.
Hello, Chris.
We do promise that Henry will be back one day. It could be Shaq the second, couldn't he? But he has said he will be back at some point. But anyway, he's at our wedding. So we won't have his delightful insights tonight.
He's also been trailing his new beta app. I don't know if you've heard about his new iPhone app.
No.
It's called Podcast Excuse. And each week it generates a new, brand new excuse. I mean, over the last few weeks, it's been France. It's been a wedding. Also,
sounds like it's a very good app.
Yeah, working well.
Much needed.
Yeah.
I wonder what's going to come up with next week. Let's crack on with some news. We've got lots written down here, so we're hoping it's not going to take too long. But anyway, follow up to the O2 issues that we talked about last week where they lost service of 24 hours. They have kindly said that they will be giving affected people a refund of 10% of their monthly charge, which equates to about 3 days service, I guess, is about right. And to everyone that's on their books, they are going to give a £10 voucher to spend in their stores. I bet you can't buy anything for £10. but there you go. That's how they're clearing up their mess. I assume that people are going to be okay with that.
It sounds fine, doesn't it?
Well, there's not much else they can do, so... They can't give them that time back. It does affect, obviously, their reputation, though. So we'll see how that goes. They won't have any more outages.
Lots of people tweeted that, that's it, I'm moving. But if you're on a contract, you're not going to move. So
No. It's going to cost you like hundreds of quid.
Yeah. So vent away, people. It's not going to happen.
Yeah. And O2 are going, lovely, more money for nothing. but on that front, we are now texting more than we talk.
Really?
Apparently so. I guess it's not so much of a surprise. I mean, I text probably once every 2 weeks maximum. My text allowance, I've got like hundreds and hundreds of texts and I never send any.
No, and I guess I message more than text, which means they don't get sent instantly and they get sent every 20 minutes. But
yes, that really handy, an instant messaging service.
But no, I do, I guess I text, but I don't, I mean this is from Ofcom. And they're saying that the average Briton is now 50 texts a week. I don't send 50 texts a week. I'm maybe sending, I don't know, between 5 and 10. Maybe sometimes it's maybe 20 odds, depending on who it is.
I don't think I've sent more than 50 messages probably in my entire life. But then I'm pretty antisocial, so it's fine.
I do text quite a bit, but not that much.
But also, another stat coming out of this was, so two-fifths of adults have smartphones now. And the same proportion saying that their phone is the most important device for accessing the internet. My phone is rubbish at accessing the internet. And my iPhone was before. So if that's how they're accessing the internet, then gosh.
But you do live in Camberwick Green.
Well, no, because I've got a good connection now. But, you know, whenever I've needed to use the internet on my phone, it is a pain. Real pain. Anyway, so that kind of surprised me that people are still like tablets. I can understand that's much more convenient.
But the tablet ownership has gone from 2 to 11% in just 12 months.
I mean, that's bonkers. Is that across the whole population, adult population?
Yeah,
that's a serious number of people.
That's a lot of tablets.
Nearly all of them are iPads, I imagine.
And to be fair, in our office there is an abundance of iPads.
We talked about this when I got mine. I think there was a tipping point or something where it became just the social norm rather than socially weird.
Kindle and iPad.
You mean you haven't got an iPad?
Yeah.
So it's, you know, more than 1 in 10. Gosh.
I mean, the Nexus come out this week, you know, great reviews. I'm still quite tempted. There's lots of talk about Apple, you know, doing a 7-inch. And I guess I think everybody's just going to cover each other now. I know Apple usually don't cover the market and they go and do their own thing, but the 7-inch is quite compelling.
It seems to be, yeah.
Yeah.
More than we thought it would be. I mean, when people start coming out with jumbo phones, we thought that's ridiculous. But actually, it's it's becoming more the norm now to see these huge phones going around.
And look how little we use them now. You know, people are texting and using them as internet devices. So phone usage is definitely dropping.
You see the Virgin have done their underground, in the London Underground, they've now got a wireless and ready for the Olympics.
Yes.
And did you see, that's probably where your broadband, your connection's gone, because they were getting something stupid like 30 megabits down and 31 megabits up on this wireless connection.
Unbelievable.
That's ridiculous. So that's where all your capacity's gone anyway.
Thanks.
Underground. Yahoo, continuing their ever need for new CEOs. They've got a new one. She's called Marissa Mayer. And she's well-respected, an old Googler.
She was Google employee number 20. I don't know if you know of her or have seen any kind of videos or content from her over the years. She certainly, no. Well, she was a bit of a public face for a while.
I don't remember names anyway, so making a difference. Okay.
So, and I guess for me, as soon as I saw this, it was like, what a great move. You know, a great move for her, because I think when Eric Schmidt, I resisted my usual kind of Schmidt joke there. When he was kind of running the show, she seemed to be in that kind of, I don't know what it was called in her council or whatever, but she was in that...
The inner sanctum.
She was in that kind of top table. She seemed to be, you know, in charge of search. She was a kind of making decisions all around, you know, what the UI looks like. And she was, you know, keeping that front page sacrosanct with no ads, etc. And she was also, she was the person turning up all the search events, all the tech conferences.
She was the kind of face of Google at some
point.
Yeah,
and she came across as pretty smart. She got a lot of press. And then when Larry and Sergey got back in, she kind of got bumped slightly. And people were talking about, you know, what's the career path? Has she been bumped? What is she really doing now at Google? And I think even just the press that Yahoo's got this week from announcing this, you know, announcing her as the CEO is amazing.
Yeah, the general sniff around the news sort of suggests that people do think this is actually a good one, that they've got a hold of someone that actually could do something now, although probably not for 6 months because she's pregnant.
But what a really kind of gutsy move, and it's kind of disappointing.
It's gutsy by the industry to employ a pregnant woman as much as anything. That's an amazing move in an industry where, you know, that's such a new way of thinking.
Yeah, she's known as a workaholic, you know, so she admitted in a number of interviews over the years, you know, she's one of these that, you know, I'll wake up at four and I'll send some emails out if I'm awake, you know, and kind of work.
Well, she is going to be woke at four now.
Yeah, work.
And three.
And she's already, and well, she's already said she's not taking, you know, maternity leave. She wants to keep working, you know, so and it's one of these things, some people's view are great, others are like, no, that's just a big step back. But I've always thought, there's a couple of folk that I work with have been the same. They've loved the time off, and others have actually said, you know, they could have done a bit of work and they kind of missed it. Some people do enjoy their work, you know. It's...
Maybe not in the first month or two, though.
No.
It's probably not a lot of time.
No. I thought this was a really good move, even just the buzz.
Yep.
You know, I take people saying, what a great move. I loved that somebody set up a page and said, you know, what she should do first, and it's save Flickr.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
so, and also, well, she's a programmer at heart as well, isn't she? So she's got those tech skills.
Yeah.
She comes from that background rather than a management one.
But the what I loved tonight was that Flickr put out a response to all this say Flickr, and it was a page done in a similar style, and it said, "Come join us, come help us." You know, it was a real nice answer back. And you could be cynical. This was announced on the same day that Yahoo's quarterly results came out, which were okay. You know, I guess this has been the problem for Yahoo for the last couple of years. They've just been okay. They've neither done anything stellar or even used any of their assets to, you know, a really good...
It seems like they've ticked along, but they've actually managed to tick along rather than losing stuff. I mean, we've talked to them. Every time we talk about them, we always talk about what are they doing. So they've kind of managed to get through this. Anyway, so good news for them. Microsoft news, they've announced Office 13, which is going to... It will run on Windows 7 and obviously Windows 8. And it looks quite intriguing. There's not much different on a program level. They fiddled with the ribbon that no one likes, so you can actually hide it away and gain some of your screen space back. But it's kind of, it's the core of it is that it's, first of all, it's offering itself as a subscription model, which they've talked about for years. And this is kind of, they've done it before, but this is I think they're really kicking off down it. But also it's how it's integrated with cloud. So it's how you're storing your documents and where they're going to be available. So the idea being that you can have your documents with you wherever you go by using SkyDrive. But yeah, this interesting one's called Office 365, I think. And basically you can be sat at any Windows PC with an internet connection and effectively stream down your copy of Office so you can work wherever you are. And then it sort of talks about deleting itself once you leave that computer. I don't know how efficient that is, but it's certainly an interesting model.
It's a bold move. So I mean, as you said, functionality wise, there doesn't seem to be too much difference between maybe, you know 2010 that's out now and what Office 13 is going to bring. But it seems to be it's the services that it's looking to provide. Because it was about a year ago that they launched the kind of web versions of Word and Excel.
Yeah, because we've, you know what? It's funny how those things kind of, they just happened and they weren't announced with any big fanfare and they're still there.
They're still there, and there was a big tie-in with Facebook. You know, you could do your docs through Facebook and share with friends, etc. But you don't really share docs with friends.
And I've never really seen anyone using it either. I don't know whether it is used.
I mean, it was a really rich web app, and maybe that was part of the problem. It was a bit sluggish to load, but it gave you a good set of functionality. I think this is interesting. I mean, one of the models we're looking at work is basically you move to I can log in anywhere and everything's just downloaded and works, you know, remotely. You've got no real local install, and this is the same for home users. Infrastructure wise, it must be a beast of a setup they've got, because the amount of people that use Office is still phenomenal.
That was one stat that I was blown away by. So there's 1 billion people on PCs worldwide still using Office. They sell it for £1, and they've got £1 billion.
It's exactly. Just,
unbelievable. But
I don't know if we've argued. I was going to say we. Amongst my amongst my friends have always talked about that, you know, Office at £300 just isn't attractive. Office at £50 is like insta purchase every time. It just it's back to
their biggest problem is they've always had that thing where the Office that you really want is always like the £300 one, because the one below, which they have now become more reasonable with amount of money. But I can't remember what it misses out, but it misses something quite vital.
Usually, if I can remember correctly, was it Home Office, not has Word, Excel, and Outlook? So you're kind of missing the PowerPoint side.
It might have been the PowerPoint. I can't remember which one it is. But anyway, so it always felt like you had to go for the up one.
Yeah.
To get what you exactly wanted, but yeah, so they've cleaned some of the navigation up. They've cleaned some of the apps up.
See, I think they went too far. One of the screenshots was of Outlook. And you couldn't tell what was currently selected, what was somebody was actually doing in that screenshot. It was almost like they'd pared it down too much, and it looked a real. It looked a car crash. You know, it just looked.
I wouldn't go that far.
No, just that one screenshot. Other apps look really smart. You know, some of the stuff that I've seen looks really good, and I do need to download the trial. The trial is available, so you can download and try it. And I will throw it on Windows 8 and see how it plays. I just that one Outlook screenshot just looked horrendous. It just looked like a whole load of grey and white and black boxes. There was just seemed to be no feeling in it whatsoever. The other bit I was a little bit. I thought they would have went more metro. I thought they would have.
Yeah, so they've got a little bit of metro kind of on the start screen when you first load it up.
But it feels like they've dipped a toe and.
I don't think we've actually seen the full Metro implementation of it yet. I think the screenshots and stuff we've seen have been of the desktop version of it, whereas there will be a Metro front end to basic features. It's also a little bit touch focused. It's kind of a middle ground though, so it's not fully touch focused, but it can be used. It's a bit like, you know, the buttons aren't made bigger so that they're useful as touch. So we'll wait and see what the Metro looks like.
It was a really bad video that they produced, and it showed you a guy out in the park kind of working on a document, and even then it looked to be struggling to select one of the buttons with the stylus, and it's like...
Well, when something's really tiny on screen, it is quite hard to press. Anyway, yeah. So no, we haven't got pricing yet. As far
there's
as
no,
I know.
There's no pricing. There's no release dates. I think they did confirm that the is it Windows RT? Is that the right name? I get all these mixed up now. That Windows RT will get an edition of Office specifically for it. So cause I think there was some rumors that there would maybe be Office would only be on the kind of pro versions of the Surface, but they have confirmed that there will be a version coming out. And I've just realized I've missed a story. They did confirm the Windows 8 release date for October 27th. Is that correct?
I thought we talked about that last week.
I think they just said fall, but it was only yesterday, the day before, that they actually said that it was October 26th.
You've got to imagine that they will release this in time for that anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, Nokia. Nokia and its ongoing woes. We need a little jingle for this bit, but I think we can call it Death Watch. I think that's fair. I think that's fair now. They've lost. Is that unfair? I don't think so. A bit harsh, maybe. But basically, they've announced even more losses. Basically, they've announced that their sales for their Lumia phones were poor. Basically, so they sold 600,000 units compared to 1.5 million of their old Symbian-based handsets. They are going to bet, I guess they bet the whole shop now on the next Windows Phone 8 software. But it was announced that, I believe, that the existing phone, so if you've just bought a Lumia, been announced that they will not run with Windows Phone 8.
No.
So that's a bit disappointing as well. So there's no reason to buy one until they bring out the new hardware.
Exactly.
So and even less sales.
And that's something, I mean, it's something where Apple, if you look back over the years, I've been really clever about the, you know, we'll only announce when we're maybe a couple of weeks away from releasing. So it just doesn't kill the previous, you know, phone. You know, and when Microsoft launched the, you know, Windows Phone 8, by saying, well, you'll get Windows 7.8, I think it was, but you won't get Windows 8, why would anybody go and buy that phone? It was just instant death. It was crazy. And I know they've half the price now to try and it is, I'm sure it is a smartphone for half the price, but I mean, 600,000 sales in the US and you know, it's poor. I mean, Android's doing that a day.
Yeah, that's kind of how it puts it into perspective that, yeah, they're in a different ballpark. That's not to say you can't live there, but this was the most valuable company in Europe 2 years ago, three years ago, maybe.
But you think that Lumia phone, everybody praised its hardware, it's a great operating system, it's fantastic. They sold a third of what they sold with the outdated Symbian software last year,
which everyone hated.
Yeah, that it's as you said. I will select a suitable chunk of music for that death knell, which is probably a bit harsh because I was going to say that they did do 4 billion revenue, and their non-smartphone sales are a lot better than expected.
Yeah, so their revenue may be good, but they're still losing money. There were restructuring charges and stuff, but effectively they've made slightly less of a loss, but they're still losing 327 million. So that's a heck of a lot of cash to be leaking.
Definitely.
Onto a story, because we've covered Google Glass. I can't even.
It's a horrible name.
Do you find that hard to say?
Yes. Yeah. I was talking to somebody the other day. Exactly, and it's like the Google, because you want to say Google Glasses and they're not glasses, and it's Google Glass.
Anyway, there's a chap out there who actually kind of has been wearing a surgically attached augmented reality goggle for a while now. But anyway, he travelled to France not that long ago, and McDonald's staff took exception to him being in there because he does look a bit startling. Let's put it that way. With this. He does look a bit Terminator.
it does a bit.
It just needs to glow red and then that'll be the completed image. But anyway, so the McDonald's didn't like him being in their store. And although he had a doctor's note, they tried to rip it off his head. Yep. But apparently it's actually stuck in his skull.
Yes. And I mean, the chap's called Steve Mann. He's been a bit of a pioneer with this. He carries around with him a doctor's note certificate. You know, so if he... I'm guessing he must go to places and they say you can't use that, and he's got this, you know, to say that actually I need it to see properly. It's not some sort of gimmick. It's not a Google Glass as you're saying. And it seems to be that he got served, but there was some staff took exception to him, and ripped up his doctor's note and kind of pushed him to the ground and tried to rip his digital eyewear off. And McDonald's have only just come back today and said that the story is rubbish. Nobody did anything. But due to a malfunction as he's been attacked, the device took some snapshots. And he's put them on the web, and
that's all sounds a little bit weird. This story could end up being a Portal T-shirt, but
well, he has been.
He definitely had pictures of these people, though.
Yeah, and the story, you know, it seemed to kind of read through, and who knows? The other bit that was odd was it happened at the kind of start of July, so it's taking maybe like 2.5 weeks to kind of break. I think he waited a wee while to do the blog post, so whether he was trying to just deal with it privately. With McDonald's, he couldn't find a way of getting in touch with them. They weren't responding to him. So maybe he felt this was his last throw of the dice.
Internet's
I need to go
a good
public.
Way to do it. Yeah.
And as I said, McDonald's have come back and said, not us, didn't do anything wrong. But he's went to Fox News and said, hold on, I've got all these pictures and you did do something wrong and here's how I got damaged. So who knows where this will go. And it's
he wants his glass fixed, basically.
Yeah, he's not looking to have the guys charged or anything. He just wants somebody to fix his.
Mind you, that probably cost him a lot of money to fix one of those things.
It will.
Something that's surgically attached to your head.
But it would be interesting if all his geeks wanting to buy these Google Glass and
chucked out of McDonald's.
Or
what would a geek do without McDonald's? It's impossible.
I'm just thinking of all the Glasgow Neds and just the All right, mate. I'm going to stab you unless you hand that over.
It's surgically attached. Honest. Apple's ongoing patent wars with Samsung. The latest installation being that a judge has ordered Apple to make public announcements that Samsung did not copy the iPad. They have to put it on their website and they have to put it in advertising, I believe.
This was my favourite story of the week. Made me chuckle like an Apple fanboy.
Naughty Apple! Now you tell everyone what you've done.
it serves them right for doing all these stupid patent lawsuits.
But Samsung did copy them a bit.
But they weren't cool enough.
So, no, they just weren't cool enough.
The punishment seems quite harsh. I mean, basically, what it's coming out is that they have to, on their main website, they have to put this notice. It has to be running for seemingly at least 6 months. And they must publish in a number of prominent newspaper and magazines within the UK. Now, I should point out, Apple have appealed.
Well, they've made no official comment either, have they?
No, but they've made no comment, but they have appealed. So yeah. It won't be happening, I guess, anytime soon because it'll just chunter its way through courts.
I am sure as well that Apple will find some quite sneaky and clever wording that actually ends up being a positive.
I'm sure the comment round Samsung weren't cool enough.
Yeah.
we'll come into it somewhere.
Must be. In other Apple news, though, they've had someone's found a way around the in-app purchasing by using some clever proxy and certificate installation. You don't have to jailbreak your phone, but you can effectively by using this get around, not have to pay for your in-app purchases, which is obviously a big developer source of income.
Absolutely. It's become a massive, if you look at a lot of the free games, they're making loads of money and it's all through in-app purchases.
It's all these little costs that you eventually end up paying for.
Exactly. Yeah. So this was a Russian hacker and he put up evidence of it and seemingly it got quite popular. It got a lot of traction, you know, around the Apple kind of blogs, etc.
I have every confidence, though, that if you did use this workaround, Apple will have a way of telling that you didn't pay for these in-app purchases, but we'll see.
It was interesting. Apple initially said that they just responded to the website, The Loop, and said the security of the App Store is incredibly important to us and the developer community. We take reports of fraudulent activity very seriously and we are investigating. And certainly 4 days after this broke, or sorry, was it 5 days? It doesn't matter. But they have actually made a change so that when you're doing a purchase and there's now a unique identifier included in validation receipts, and this was one of the suggestions, I think, from some of the developer community that would help them authenticate in-app purchases. So, and also,
and that's quicker than they respond to most things. So
absolutely. Pretty, yeah. And also, I mean, just to point out to people, although somebody might be sitting there thinking, yay, free stuff. You are sending quite a lot of information to this Russian hacker.
Yeah, you're having to go through his servers.
Yeah, so you're sending on like the ID of the app, the ID of version, your device ID, how much you did, what was the name, what language you're using, identifier, version of the application, your locale. So you are giving out quite a bit of information. Apple also initially tried to DNS block the server, so the guy just moved to another location. So
as much as those warnings and all that kind of stuff, kids won't care about that. Has it actually been closed down? I think it might have actually been stopped, or the loophole.
It was stopped, and the hacker moved his service. So I think it was still right. up, but so this new step. They reckon was just one of a number of things that Apple are doing to tighten up in-app purchases.
I don't think I would recommend that anyone did this because I believe that the audit trail would be long enough that Apple would probably just ban you from its audit services if they felt that you'd done it deliberately.
I think the other thing Apple confirmed as well is that there wouldn't be any compensation paid back to developers losing income. So a few of them were like, ah!
Right, so that's a risk that there's something in there... user guide or their privacy. Well, I've got terms and conditions will say that they can do that, I'm sure.
Yep.
Okay, this is a story I don't really know anything about, but Apple were going to remove themselves from the EPEAT environmental standard. I don't know if that's how you say it.
It does work for me.
Right. But they have now done a U-turn on that based on people's requests.
It's a very, very strange story. They put out a press release saying we're pulling out of EPEAT, even though that if you think the last few keynotes, they really do emphasize how green they are and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Did I say it? So it's an environmental standard that people choose. Well, if you tick enough boxes, you can be on this list.
Yes.
And lots of companies in America kind of use it as a way of defining whether what products and services you can buy on the company accounts.
Exactly, and so there's lots of companies and also government services will only buy from an EPEAT, recommended supplier, etc. So Apple pulled out, and initially it was a bit of like, ugh. And then some people were saying, well, it's obvious because if you look at things like iPad and the new Retina, they're so unrepairable, and they're so it's from a breakdown, in 10 years' time point of view, they're so hard to do because everything's glued together. But it was obvious, and the statement initially did kind of say that. It's like, we're being green where we can be, but in certain areas we are, form over function, or sorry, that kind of performance over the ticking a box.
We want that before the regulations caught up to allow us to do it. Yeah.
But basically 2 weeks later they went, actually, we realise now a lot of people find this important, so we have re-signed up. And then the way they did it was that it was like a statement from Bob Mansfield, who was our head of manufacturing, and it was all very personal. I recognise that this was a mistake. Starting today, all our eligible Apple products are back on EPEAT. Now, the bit that's interesting is he announced he was leaving, so it almost feels like he's taking a bit of a hit for this. He's already going to go. And it was a very personal statement to say, I've recognised the problem and I've reversed the decision.
Who wants this one? We need something to bear. You're off. All right, come on then.
Ah, it's Tim.
We've had Digg has been acquired. Digg, the internet recommendation service, and Betaworks has bought them. Now, Betaworks are famous for things like Bitly, the URL shortener, news.me, which I've never used, and Chartbeat, which I've never used.
I tried news.me. Everybody was talking about it and saying it was really great, and I just never got much out of it, to be honest.
But anyway, they've bought Digg, and their concept is they want to turn it back into a culture of a startup, so lean and lightweight, back to its roots rather than the sprawling mass. I mean, at one point, Digg was the big thing, wasn't it? Everyone had a Digg on their site, and people used it all the time to go and find new content, but I think it fell by the wayside.
It does.
And Facebook's like pretty much killed it.
Yeah, and you had things like, I mean, Kevin Rose was the kind of guy behind it. He was like the kind of poster child for the, from an idea I'm now worth 200 million. I think it was at the Time front page was the, him with the headphones on, the cap, and the, hey, this kid's worth 200 million, and clearly it wasn't. And they took a lot of money. There was a lot of venture capital sunk into this over the years, and they've not, definitely not made it back. And so there's been a bit of a debate this week about, was it successful? You know, was it a failure? I think it influenced a lot of other sites.
I was going to say, it's definitely got its place on the journey of the internet and its development.
I used to love Dig. And then
yeah, it was good. I
guess what became obvious, but there was a few, I'm tempted to say a handful, but I think it was only maybe like, you know, 30, 40 users that basically gamed the site. They kept on digging each other up, and they were all about, we need to be the top Dig users. And it felt controlling.
Because if you were a big digger, then basically you got to, you all had more influence, and therefore it was up to them. And there was that whole, that we had news stories even on our podcast saying, you know, it was all down to these few influential people that actually define what went on to Dig, and what went on the homepage, as with any search engine, is incredibly important.
And people there was a lot of allegations about companies paying these top diggers.
Yeah.
Link my story, please. And we'll, and I know there was a lot of denials, and the engine was tweaked to try and stop that, but I don't think
it was that actually killed it. I think it was just generally over time, and I say it's not died, it's still around.
No, Reddit one as well. Reddit is totally that kind of community, that kind of place. You know, if you want to go and see news and getting voted up, that's the place to go and see it.
Anyway, it doesn't look like there's reports that they haven't sold it for that much money, but anyway, they've still got a good number of people using their site, so I'm sure it will live on. Then it doesn't sound like they're taking on the people, they're just taking on the name and the site, basically.
No, the people get sold. Was it Washington Post or New York Times? I think bought their engineering team for 16 million. So there was I think they were talking about 500K. But there's also some of the IP went to LinkedIn. So seemingly LinkedIn have bought the patent for voting up content on a website. So there's a number of different purchases. As you said, it's one of those notable steps over the years. Everybody probably has used Dig in some shape or form.
Yep. Now TV. So Now TV is the internet TV service, or pay-per-view TV, being launched by Sky B, to compete with things like Netflix and Love Film. But they have announced they're having a subscription model. So £15 a month, you can, I guess, view their library. But they're also doing a pay-per-view, so they're saying films can range from 99p up to £3.49 for a view. And you can have an account. You don't have to be a Sky subscriber, so this is kind of a deviation. Most things, you have to be a Sky subscriber to actually take part in with Sky, but this is to try and attract those people that do not want a monthly contract, which end up being very expensive. We've talked about that lots. So it is going to start off with films, so it's going to be their kind of Sky Movies catalogue, but they have said they're going to expand it quite aggressively into their sports coverage and things like Sky Atlantic, which is where we get most of the HBO content from America. Expand it further, please, and not much further, and then that's might well interest me quite considerably.
Exactly, as you said, that they're not chasing after, you know, a Sky user. They'll get 10 million users. They're chasing after the other 50 million. I know there's not another 50 million TVs, but they're chasing after the rest of the population that, you know, currently say, well, I don't need to pay for, I don't need a subscription. I'd rather just, you know, either buy DVDs or, you know, watch Freeview. It's definitely going to be interesting. I'm not so much the kind of sport and film, but as you said, I mean, Sky Atlantic, you know, would they be bold enough to say, not so much a channel, but maybe if you wanted to watch Mad Men,
you can just pay for the episode. It will be good to see whether they do that. But if it ends up costing the same as getting a hardware where you get effectively better quality of TV into your lounge, then that's not going to work for me. But if I can work it where I just get to pay for the content and it's a proportion of what I get now, but I pay less for it, then exciting times potentially.
Definitely. And if the quality is there. You know, so
yes,
long
the quality
as it's not,
does have to be there, and as long as it's sure not, you have to have a nice connection.
Yeah, as long as it's not compressed to hell, you know, so they can they can stream it. I think we'll only know probably till end of the year once they've got sport and the channels there, and they've actually said here's what the overall price is. As you said, there's no point paying the same as a Skybox.
No, Because, I mean, even things like, I don't have Sky Sports at the moment, but, you know, when the Ashes is on, I do quite miss not, you know, having the cricket.
Absolutely.
And so it would be a nice way, again, to, assuming it's not going to cost the an arm and a leg, and you might as well. I mean, that's the problem. They'll probably twist it so that if you have got a Sky Box, they'll make it worthwhile. You're well, just the upgrading.
And, but the thing to look at is if they turned around and said, you know, you're not a Sky user, but if you want to watch the Ashes, 20 quid.
Yeah.
You know, so it's, it sounds a lot of money, but in over a year...
But if that unlocked you, the Ashes for that whole series, then, you know, that it would... It makes sense because, you're not paying for the whole... You have to subscribe for 6 months, 12 months, whatever it is.
So. And that's the thing. If they turned around and said, you know, to watch the Grand Prix over the course of a year, it's £50. Sounds a lot of money, but that's 2 months of Sky Sports. You know, so it's like, in the grand scheme, it's like, well, there's everybody got their F1. I know it's not free. I know it's not in BBC, but... It's cheaper than going the whole Sky hog.
And I think we are probably ahead of the curve here because not everyone's ready to have their, you know, they can't hook up these things to their TV yet or whatever. And the quality and their broadband connection is not up to it. But it does show the future, and we're not that far away from it. The future seems to happen quite quick nowadays.
No. And we haven't mentioned that they are aggressively going to chase after Android, iOS, and it's also Xbox and Roku. You know, so I think the Xbox one is potentially the important
well, that
one.
Is hooked up. Yeah, I was going to say that is a set-top box hooked up to your TV already.
Absolutely.
Via HDMI. So, yeah. Now, the Olympics, they always get bad rap over the years about how much they control their brand, and for very good reason. But it does appear that, I don't know whether it does get worse each year, but I think it does. I think certainly how they control it gets worse.
I saw the story that policemen, if they're eating a bag of crisps, I've been told to empty the crisps into a clear plastic bag so that they don't advertise another competitor's brand during the Olympics.
Yeah, so McDonald's had a whole lockdown on the Olympic Park, so the only thing you can pretty much eat in the whole Olympic Park is a McDonald's, which is just
fantastic.
Unbelievable. I mean, that's exactly what everyone said they didn't want to happen.
It's the same
it has happened.
Visa and MasterCard. There's a whole host of hotels have been shut down. Because they're within the radius of the Olympic Park, they're not allowed to use MasterCard. It's
unbelievable that they can have the laws like that. And they bring in special laws, especially for the Olympics. That's how part of the deal of getting the Olympics that you have to do this. I can't believe that brands want to be associated with that much real. I mean, that's horror story type stuff. That's Big Brother gone mental.
In the grand scheme, but is it just is there only a small percentage of the population ever gets to understand that, and then they just think, sod it. You know, the vast majority are going to be like, there's McDonald's, you know, linked to a fantastic, you know, sporting event.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, they have it's things like the Westfield Shopping Centre, which is just across, which is where everyone's going to come through to the Olympics. None of the shops in there they call them the golden words, and there's about 12, which includes like the date 2012. And if they use any two of those words in connection with each other, then they can have takedown notices effectively. And they can't even say words without, you know, it's free speech basically. It's real. It's horrible. I mean, it really is.
There was a Sally Gunning story. She was having a picture taken with an EasyJet brand. And she was holding up a British flag, and they asked her not to use the British flag because it was linked to Olympics and success and her. And at this time of the year, they're not allowed to do these kind of things. And it's like, what?
It's unbelievable to have you can have a law that says that you can't do things like that. And it does, it all gets a bit ridiculous. But there you go. What can you do? Because I guess the Olympics cannot happen without people putting in their money, and maybe they're not prepared to put in their money. I can't believe they're not. But maybe they're not prepared to put in their money if they can't get these exclusive things.
But interestingly, we've spent the last 5 minutes moaning about this, but the Olympics website and their grand wisdom says, if you moan about the Olympics and you put it online and then you link back to the Olympics site.
Yeah, we can't have a link to the Olympics now.
Yeah, so they've actually changed the way we use the internet. We are breaking we're breaking their IP laws. By mourning about the Olympics and linking to them.
I wonder whether that is actually possible, that they could sue you for linking to their website if you've moaned about them. I wonder whether they could. I don't know. I imagine it's hard to prove that, isn't it? I don't know. Anyway, that's the latest thing yet. You can't link to their website if you have made a derogatory comment towards the Olympics.
So you can imagine Twitter, when this broke the other day, Twitter was a bit of a meltdown with lots of people being derogatory and linking to it.
People, hands exactly. rubbing glee across their face. The next thing.
And the thing is, we've talked about these kind of texts and you know, and the terms and conditions, and we've said it's like boilerplate stuff. This isn't boilerplate. Somebody sat there and said, you know what? We need to put this in here. Nobody is allowed to. And fair enough, when it says false, misleading, but then when it says derogatory or some or otherwise objectionable, you know, if somebody's had a bad experience when they're visiting the Olympics, they should be able to tell people, I've had a bad experience.
Absolutely.
I certainly think there was a bit of exaggeration a couple of days ago when, you know, one American tweets, I've been in a bus for 4 hours, and every website apart from the BBC went into meltdown to say, Transport's broken.
Well, that's because the media are looking to, they're looking to grab hold of something, and they've got to get something somewhere, and they will find it somewhere. Anyway, that is the end of our podcast for this week. So thanks for listening. If you want to find out more about us, we are on www.digitaloutbox.com, and you can email us info@digitaloutbox.com, and Twitter and Skype, you can contact us via Digital Outbox. I am on Twitter as CheesyUK. Where can we find you, Ian?
My blog is iand.net. I'm on Twitter as Shweepa.
Wunderbar. Brilliant. We will talk at you next week. Have no doubt. See you then.
Ta-da.
Bye.
Seventeen hours to Batman.